is the Tom Likas Show.
It's not so bad with the shaking of the tuchus.
Now, from the new normal studios in Burbank.
I'm ready for sex.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. From the new normal studios in Burbank, this is where you hear us live Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24-7 at blowmeupcom.com. You can hear us in our brand new free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at TomEverywhere.com. That's TomEverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again with another bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And as he does every Tuesday, live at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, here is criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Adam, good to see you.
Great to be here, Tom.
What's going on?
Not much. You spend most of the show today talking about HIV.
HIV, terrorism, yeah.
Yes, well, I want to talk about criminal law and technology, which I know you'll love.
Of course.
We talk a little bit in the past about, we've talked about DUI. And the big thing with the DUI is this machine that the police have, which is this thing that you blow into and it tells you exactly what your blood level is supposed to be. And, you know, we have a great fascination today with technology, and people believe from these TV shows, I guess like these CSI and that sort of thing, that, you know, that these incredible forensic sciences exist, and, you know, the police can get you. What's actually interesting is that the standard expectations, in fact, are not true. There's a very interesting article, which is in the Georgetown Law Review, that I'm going to talk about. If anyone's interested in this, send me an email and I'll send you a copy of it. But it's written by one of the judges of the California Supreme Court. And he says that, for example, the testimony of eyewitnesses is very unreliable. How do you like that? And more so when it crosses over the race. So in other words, when there's an eyewitness who's black identifying a white criminal, or an eyewitness who's white identifying a black criminal, the mistakes of that eyewitness go into the range of 80 to 90%.
Yeah.
When you talk about the things that we look at today in science and technology, for example, such as hair, bites, and fingerprints. Now, that's a big one. You know, they show this thing where they find a hair and they compare it or whatever. That's not a science. That's actually up to 100% inaccurate. There's also the thing where they do bite marks. There have been some cases of rapists, for example, who bit the victim. And then they were, you know, getting a cast of the person's teeth or whatever and trying to match it. I saw that in an old... Remember Quincy? Remember?
I do.
Dr. Quincy, he had a whole thing with that. Well, that turns out not to be a science. One of the things that people see, and this is based, you know, obviously in, you know, TV shows and the news and all, is you see fingerprints. In the world, we're supposed to all have unique fingerprints. And the police, you know, dust for fingerprints, and they find a fingerprint, and that proves that the person was there, and they get fingerprints off of all kinds of things. It turns out that there are people that have the same fingerprints. And also, it's not an exact science. This is pretty incredible, but in 2004, there was a bombing in Madrid, Spain, of the trains there. This was a kind of a post-9/11 thing. Spain was helping the United States, particularly against Iraq, and there was this big bombing, and they found a fingerprint, and they put it through a database, and they ended up arresting an attorney from Oregon. And these fingerprint geniuses from the FBI and Interpol said that this fingerprint that they found in Spain was conclusively this lawyer from Oregon. And they actually arrested him and kept him in jail and so forth. It turns out He had never been to Spain, and he had nothing to do
with
it at all.
But he kind of liked the music.
I guess. Maybe not anymore. there's voice identification. We've seen that also in television and movies, where a person's on the phone, things like that. I know your favorite show, Maury. They do lie detectors, you know, where they do the voice analysis or whatever. You know, did they ask, you know, did the Devon cheat or whatever?
It's not voice analysis. They do the like the pulse. They
that's the polygraph machine.
Right, that's
you
what
know,
they do.
The inventor of the polygraph machine was actually a medical student, and when he was finished with it, he ended up saying that it was a fraud himself. And he denounced it, and that is amazing how that's considered scientific, and that that's used by government and the police and all sorts of agencies. You know, if you're a psychopath and you believe your own lies, then it's very easy for you to stay calm. You'll recall there was a very famous case of
Let me stop you right there.
Sure.
Okay. So all right. So if you're a psychopath or a sociopath. Probably a sociopath more than a psychopath. All right, so you believe your own lies. So you could lie, and it could say you're telling the truth. But what if it's the other way around? What if you clearly, if you are lying and it says you're lying, you must be lying, right?
Not necessarily.
Really?
It's checking for changes in your pulse and your blood pressure and so forth.
Right.
So what I was just going to say, the most famous example is this was named Aldrich Ames. And he was a CIA guy, actually in the agency.
First listing in the phone book.
I didn't think of it that way. Okay, that's a possibility.
He lived on Zizek Road.
He lived near me, actually, where I used to live in Alexandria, Virginia.
Yes.
And he had been giving United States secrets to the Soviets for years. I mean, like for 30 years.
Yeah.
And he was given polygraph exams every 6 months during all that time. And they never caught anything. And I guess, you know, what you're saying is someone who's lying, but they're calm about it, or they're trying, you know, not to cover or whatever. But you've seen on those TV shows where they put it on and they say, you know, did you cheat on your girlfriend or your wife or whatever? And the guy says no. And the test shows that Marlon is lying, you know, and everyone gets very excited.
That was a lie.
Not scientific whatsoever. There's also handwriting analysis. The very famous trial of the century, this goes way back, was the Lindbergh case. Charles Lindbergh was the first person to fly a single plane across the Atlantic Ocean. And he ended up living in New Jersey and having a son who was kidnapped and ultimately killed. And that was connected because when they took the kid, they gave ransom notes. And the person that was arrested was connected due to handwriting analysis. Turns out that the error rates of handwriting analysis is between 40 and 100%. So that's not a science. Not a science, Tom.
You're going to ruin Maury for me now.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but Maury is DNA testing. And as we learned in the OJ case, DNA testing, while a very interesting thing, and it's definitely exonerated a lot of people. You've seen that, the Innocence Project.
Yeah. You think those people should be in prison?
Well, no, but the DNA test is only as accurate as the samples that are taken. And in the case of OJ, there was suspicion placed on the cop, Furman, who found the glove, right?
Right.
If you don't believe him, and you don't believe that he had the glove, or that he planted the glove, or whatever he did with the glove, then even if there's a DNA match, which there was, and OJ had blood all over the place, all over the backyard and and his car, as I recall, but if you don't believe where the sample came from, then the match doesn't help and doesn't prove anything, and that's obviously a big problem. The criminal justice system, as it turns out, is actually very, very flawed. And it's fascinating the way that the police, for example, can convince a victim who's usually pretty upset or traumatized, and they can show them only one suspect, and they can convince the victim that that's the person that attacked them, even if it's not. And later on, when the victim, you know, testifies or whatever, you know, months or years later, the victim will remember identifying the person when the police showed it to them rather than what actually happened. when the person was actually attacked.
Right.
So they can actually remember at the wrong time, and they're remembering the tendency of what the police believe. You know, the police tend to show prejudices where they pick someone, they believe that this is probably the person, and then they close the case very quickly. They don't want to go beyond. They use a concept which is called Occam's razor. It's a very interesting scientific concept, which is true sometimes, but basically what Occam's razor says is that when circumstances are the same, generally speaking, the simplest explanation is the correct explanation. So in other words, if a woman's dead and her husband's there and he's got some blood on his shirt, and it turns out they got in a fight last week, well, case closed. It must be him. When he says, "I didn't do it. I saw a one-armed man." Remember that?
I do. The fugitive. Of
there
course.
You go. I saw a one-armed man and I fought with him and he ran away. The cops go, "Yeah, bullshit. That's too complicated. You're the guilty one, and that's pretty much it." It's, you know, very fair, and you know this from your own life, that, you know, human memory is a strange thing. It's not infallible. Even your own memories, some of them are changeable. It's been shown, this is a very interesting thing, you know, parents will tell you something that you did as a child. And they'll say, "Oh, my God, when you were little Tom, you were so cute. I always remember Christmas when you knocked the tree over when right. you were about 3 years old."
Yep.
And you as, you know, let's say now you're 16. You don't really remember that. You literally don't remember it from when you were three. But your parents have repeated it to you and the adults have told it to you in different circumstances. And you start to believe that you have an independent memory of it, where you actually don't. It actually was prompted to you. The other interesting thing, and this is something that the police are very big on, there was a really interesting movie called In the Name of the Father, which was with Daniel Day-Lewis, and it was about an incident that happened in England where there was a bombing. It was actually in Ireland, Northern Ireland, with the English and so forth. But there was a bombing, and they arrested these people that were actually innocent. And what they did was, is they just questioned them and tortured them and wouldn't let them sleep. And ultimately, they confessed. Now, this is another fascinating thing. In conventional wisdom says people will never confess if they're innocent. But that's not necessarily true. There's a certain point if you're tortured, literally physically, you know, beaten up or whatever. But hopefully that doesn't happen in the Western countries. But if you're exhausted emotionally in different ways, and if you have the police pressing you and pressing you, it's amazing. There was actually a guy, I remember this very well because I lived nearby in Virginia. Like I said, this was in Maryland. They were very convinced that he had killed this little girl that was his neighbor. And they arrested him, and they did all kinds of techniques. He wasn't the brightest guy in the world. And ultimately, he just wanted to please them or to get them to leave him alone. And he actually confessed to killing the girl. They kept saying, "You did it. You know you did it." He said, "Yeah, you're right. I did it." And they actually went to the woods, and he actually acted out the crime. And he actually showed what he had done and where he had killed her and where he had buried her and so forth. And it wasn't until years later that it turned out that what he described was not at all what happened. And they never found the body until years later when the real killer emerged. And here you had a guy that was convicted and sentenced to multiple life terms based on his confession, when actually he really was, I know it's crazy, he was innocent.
Now, was he exonerated at that
yes,
point?
Yes, of course.
He was.
His life was obviously ruined. I mean, he was in jail for many years, and he was supposed to have been this person. You know, the idea that people have conventional wisdom that a guilty person would never confess. Right, Tom? You would never confess to doing something you didn't do, right? Not necessarily.
I don't think I would.
Well, you're a tough guy.
I've been accused of things.
I understand. If we put you in, you know, with a rubber hose and start giving you the thumb screws,
well,
who
the
knows?
Only time I ever said I did something I didn't was when I was in domestic violence.
Well,
class.
There you go. That was a form of torture.
But the thing is, it's not like they fooled my mind into believing
right.
something I didn't believe. I said it because they made it clear if I didn't say that, I would never get out.
Yeah, I wonder how useful that really was, just to get you to say the words. That's very strange.
Ridiculous.
I don't know. Well, that didn't seem too smart to me.
No.
So anyway, so what this article talks about are these different circumstances and this over-reliance on technology and some of the basic assumptions and so forth. And, you know, what people have to recognize, and this is really important, is how complex truth is and how complex things can become. And, you know, people don't think that it's going to happen to them. It's more of a TV show kind of thing where people say, you know, just like The Fugitive or whatever, they say, oh my God, you know, I can't imagine, you know, if I was ever accused of a crime and so forth. But you see it in smaller ways, which is like when I talk about DUI. That little breathalyzer machine is very, very inaccurate. It's known to be. And people think, oh my God, this is so scientific. Bullshit, it's not scientific at all. And in fact, there have been multiple lawsuits against the companies that make them. That's a very big business. Also, the software in it is proprietary, so you don't know how it works. The police very often are not very experienced with it. They don't have them well calibrated. There's supposed to be a calibration that's done, which of course is to set, you know, what different levels are. And this is going to be a thing that's going to make a very big difference in your life. It could be the difference between getting convicted or not getting convicted, and being convicted of a DUI, as we've talked about, has gigantic consequences. And when people blow into this thing and the machine says, you know, 0.09, you're guilty, when I talk to people, they completely accept it. They accept it because it's a machine, it's technology, it must be true. And I got to tell you, it's just like this thing with fingerprints. If you told me, look, we're sure that Mr. X over here robbed your house. And I say, oh, well, I'm glad you found the guy. How do you know it's him? And they say, well, we found his fingerprint. I mean, you'd say, wow. You know, that's it. It's done. It's conclusive. Well, like I said, fingerprint technology is not infallible. And the idea that everyone has a different fingerprint is not necessarily correct either. I read a recent article, very interesting, about snowflakes. You know how they say, like, every single snowflake is different, and, you know, different pattern? That's not true. It turns out that there are snowflakes that follow the same patterns, and that's true for fingerprints as well. I remember when I was young, they were talking about twins, that even twin sisters had different fingerprints. And apparently that's true, but it's still possible, as we said, about this guy from Madrid that was matched, and all the experts were saying absolutely. You also see, and this is definitely true, a lot of people today are protesting about the police, and the police are, you know, bad to black people or whatever. There is no doubt about it that the police generally are trying to do their job, but there are bad apples, and this is also true for detectives and prosecutors. I mean, they are not necessarily being objective. And again, using Occam's razor, they are sometimes, you know, seizing upon something and saying, well, that's it, it must be this guy, and not investigating much further possible leads that might lead them in different directions. Police generally, and this is especially true of like elite units and these special technology things and CIS and these kind of, CSI, I should say, they get credit based on convictions. And, you know, your average cop wants to get convictions. He wants to get as many as possible. He wants to solve his cases. And they're under pressure to solve their cases. And so, you know, if they've got you and they're pretty sure it's you, and you're swearing it's not you, that's not exactly unusual. I mean, usually the one who's guilty says, it's not me, it's not me, it's not me. And so the cops say, yeah, okay, bullshit, it's not you. We know it's you. And this shows a lot of factors where people end up getting burned for things they didn't do. Now, you see television. In television, you think that everyone goes on trial, but the truth is that more than 99% of cases are pleas, and they don't go to trial. And so when you think about a lot of people don't have the money to go to a trial, or they have a public defender who doesn't want to, you know, go to trial, or they don't have the energy, or they've been told of the risk. Now, think about this. Let's say you're told if you plead guilty, you're going to get 5 years of probation, which is not pleasant, of course, and pay some fines, but not spend any time in jail. But if you don't plead guilty and you lose, we do a trial, then you might end up with 10 years in jail. So you look at the possibility of 5 years of probation, which is not great, but being free, or taking a roll of the dice, losing perhaps, spending a lot of money, and getting 10 years in jail. So a lot of people will say, the hell with that, and they would take a plea. Now, that's a tragedy because the person says, you know, why should I take a plea if I'm innocent? But the answer is maybe it's more practical or just simply more smart to do that to avoid the risk of everything going wrong and ending up convicted, you know? One of the things that's really interesting in terms of deterring crime, this is something that President Obama now is trying to reverse. I don't know if you saw this, Tom, but he recently signed pardons and executive orders and let approximately 6,000 or 7,000 federal prisoners out of jail. Back in the 1990s, when Clinton was president, there was a big push to increase the length of crimes and the strictness of sentences, particularly with certain drugs such as crack cocaine, which was considered a big scourge. And so you had people getting unbelievably long sentences, 20, 30, 40 years for crack cocaine. And that was supposed to deter crime. Now, the question is, do long sentences deter people? And the answer is no, they don't. You know, this thing that you talk about, this is actually one of my favorite lines, Tom, and you've got a lot of great ones. This is one of my real favorites. You were saying, you and I want to do heroin tonight, but we can't because it's illegal, right? Who says that?
Well, I know no one says that.
Exactly.
Everybody who wants to do heroin tonight is doing it.
You're damn right. If you really think about it, seriously, you and I are two addicts or whatever we are, just two scumbags, and we say, hey, Tom, let's go get some crack or whatever, and you go, yeah, Adam, great idea. I don't think that either of us says, hey, wait a minute, that could get us 20 years. We better not.
Right. You just have to pay more for it. That's all.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you think about all the things in life that are, you know, made illegal, essentially you're just increasing the price. We just had this horrific, horrific terrorist incident in France. And France is, you know, a place, particularly, you know, the city, Paris and so forth, it's very difficult to get a license to carry a weapon or to even have weapons. They don't have a Second Amendment like the United States. They make fun of us. They call us, you know, cowboys in the Wild West or whatever. But when you see that the terrorists, these killers, who, by the way, are not even French people, some of them were foreign nationals and whatnot, or refugees, and they had AK-47 fully automatic with as many weapons, rounds, and everything else that they needed, suicide vests. I mean, how are they able to get all this good stuff when that's illegal, right? Well, basically, they bought it, I suppose, on the black market, and all, like you said, Tom, is just the increasing the price. When I was in Colombia, you've been to Colombia, right?
Tom,
you went to Cartagena, as I recall.
Cartagena, yeah.
I certainly didn't buy it, but I was offered cocaine for, I think, $1 a gram or something really, really inexpensive. And here in the United States, it's more than $100 a gram. But basically, the difference in price is that in Colombia, that's where it comes from, and bringing it to the United States is a lot of work. But that doesn't mean it doesn't get here. It just means that they have to deal with smuggling and paying off and losing some of the shipments. And that just essentially drives the price higher. But the person who lives in the Western country that wants the illegal item is still going to be able to get it. It's just going to be more expensive.
Right.
That's certainly true, for example, of prostitution. You know, if you look at any of these magazines or online or whatever, there's tons and tons of prostitutes, even though that's illegal. And essentially, it's just increased the cost. When you look at the nature of human beings, I mean, people make mistakes and people are fallible. And every society, you know, has always had the problem of dealing with miscreants. And how do you deal with people that hurt other people, or people that steal, or people that do things wrong? And our society has never really effectively found a way to deal with it. Now, most of the people that I deal with as a defense attorney are not scumbag people, are not people that have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of offenses. They're usually decent people that have made mistakes or gotten involved in the wrong kinds of things. I'll give you a small example, Tom. This is happening a lot. I have a lot of young people who are in college or around college age, so we're talking early 20s. And I have one right now, a young woman who's 21 or 22, and she went to a party, at a university campus in our area, and some of her friends got separated or whatever. She wasn't sure where they were. She went looking for them. She did this, she did that, and ultimately she had a cop pull her over. She was on a sidewalk walking in front of a building, and she had a glass in her hand, which was with a vodka. It was when she was in the party, someone had given her the drink, and she was sipping it, and she went outside, and she was looking for her friends, and now she was outdoors with a glass of alcohol, and that's an open container violation. So she was arrested, and she was given a ticket, which doesn't sound like that big a deal, and she's not going to get thrown in prison or whatever, but basically they want her to pay a fine and take some kind of an alcohol class. But this is someone who wants to be a nurse. And if she is convicted of this offense, you know, at 21, in a few years from now when she's finished nursing school and she's trying to get her nursing license, this is something that could really mess her up. Nurses have to handle drugs, and they have to give patients, you know, narcotics and all kinds of things. And if she has a conviction related to alcohol, this is something that could make it difficult for her to get her nursing license. And that's, you know, the reality of most people. Most people are decent. Most people try to be law-abiding, I think, and they make mistakes, and they get involved in things, and they get in fights, or they get arrested for being drunk in public, or drunk driving, or, you know, we see all these domestic things that happen where the wife calls the police, the husband gets arrested for pushing her or hitting her or whatever. People get into all kinds of altercations and disagreements and so forth. But, you know, the amazing thing now, I've got guys that scream at their girlfriend about, you know, I'm because they're angry, I'm going to get you, bitch. And nowadays they get arrested for making terrorist threats, which is a very serious offense.
Right.
And you see how this idea that we have, this system that we have, that, you know, you get exonerated by the DNA or the fingerprints or whatever, and you see what a bunch of horseshit it all is, and how a lot of it doesn't work, a lot of it doesn't really make sense, a lot of it seems to be very scientific, but is actually junk science. And, you know, just think tonight how many people are sitting in jail that are innocent, and that's a very disturbing fact. And the bottom line is that we do the best we can. And I got to say what I always say, which is when you come face to face with a cop, you shut up, you do not talk, and you say, I want a lawyer, and you make sure you get yourself a lawyer, and you make sure you get someone right from the beginning and fight all the way through. A lot of people start off without a lawyer. They think they can, you know, deal with it. And as it gets crazier and crazier, then they finally hire a lawyer, but they've already made a lot of serious miscalculations and mistakes. And it just shows how it is possible, even in a great society, an open society like we have, with a constitution, that you can still get absolutely screwed. And you see how even fingerprints don't really work, DNA doesn't really work, that voice print analysis doesn't work, polygraphs don't work, technology is bullshit.
All right. So then nobody would ever be convicted of anything.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the biggest things, and I mentioned it just now, is, you know, eyewitness, right? Eyewitness testimony. You know, if you ever played this game when you're a kid, Tom, they call it telephone, where you have 10 kids and you say something to the first kid, and then he has to repeat it to the next kid, to the next kid. It becomes a completely different message. And what's amazing, when there's, you know, a murder or something in broad daylight, there'll be five witnesses who saw, you know, eyewitness the whole thing. And when you separate them, they will come up with completely different stories. And one will say it was a guy, he was tall. Another will say it was a woman. Another will say it was a blonde guy. Another will say it was a black guy. And he went that way. No, he went the other way. I mean, it shows you the frailty of human memory. And just of human beings in general. Also, of course, when it happens, it's very fast. It's very stressful, so people are freaked out. They see things, you know, let's say some kind of violent act. And you see the post-mortem of a big crime, like, again, what happened in France. They're going to have hundreds and hundreds of investigators. What you don't see is they end up following on hundreds and thousands of bogus leads. Because they have people who say, I'm sure it was, I'm so positive. And then ultimately it turns out, you know, that was crap, and the police may spend weeks or months following up on things that were a complete waste of time. That's always the case in serious investigations. So
let's
careful.
Let's take a break here, because we got calls coming in. and we want to get to those. We're here with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. He's here to answer your legal questions. These are free legal questions you can call in and ask right now. And all you have to do is dial this number right now, 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM. That's our telephone number. It's 901-3000-866.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, this is our weekly bonus hour. And we are joined by criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs at 901-3000-TOM. That's the number to talk to Adam with your legal questions. 901-3000-TOM. Call me now. 901-3000-866. Here's Raphael in Coachella, California. Raphael, you're on the Tom Likas Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Not much.
Hey.
So I have my question for Adam. About 2 weeks ago, I went to Louisiana, and I took my sister along. We went driving from California, and I guess she went out with her cousin, and she ended up drinking at a bar, and when she left the parking lot, she was drunk, and she crashed into, like, a satellite dish, and I guess there was literally cops right in front. So as soon as they pulled her over, they gave her a ticket for a careless operation and open container. First of all, there was no open container, and I guess she was asleep when they got her, so she didn't sign no ticket or none
sleep.
Of that. They just sent her to...
Oh, my.
So she landed into a dish and she fell asleep?
Yes.
That's pretty twisted.
Yeah, that's what the alcohol does to girls, you know.
Yeah, they actually show that alcohol has a much bigger effect on women. Women are smaller and their brain is smaller, and a smaller amount of alcohol has a bigger effect on them.
What are you, a misogynist, saying women's brains are smaller?
Oh, there you go again. It's just true.
But the point is, I guess once they sent her to the hospital, I got a call about 7 in the morning. And I guess I want to go pick her up. And they were supposed to take her to jail, but they didn't even do that either. They just let her out straight out of the hospital.
Really?
So what I want to
know
is...
It's interesting how more lenient they are on women, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. If you were a guy, you'd been getting your ass kicked, you know?
Yeah, you'd be in jail right away.
Damn right. Girl smiles and they go, oh, the poor thing, you know? It's not her fault. So anyway, what happened to her in the end?
Well, in the end, I guess they just gave her the ticket. And the first time that she called, they had told her that it wasn't a DWI. And I guess she had called again, and now they're saying that it is, and she's got to go to court.
Well, I don't know why she's calling. That's a mistake. That you should look right at the ticket. The ticket says, you know, what it is, and it says the aspect of the law, you know, in terms of the section that's been violated. It should have that with specificity. I talk to a lot of people who, you know, they're calling the police and they're talking to the detectives, and that's a big mistake. You should make sure she has a lawyer and that the lawyer, you know, figures out what the story is and, you know, builds a defense for her. This is not something you want her to deal with herself. She doesn't sound like the smartest girl in the world anyway.
That's true. And the funny part is that they even gave her a release of surrendering the license.
I understand, but, you know, a lot of times people get lulled into it at the beginning because she wasn't necessarily arrested, and they let her go, and they did this to her and that to her. So, you know, the experience of being arrested wasn't as bad as it could have been, but that doesn't mean that they're not still throwing the book at her, you know? When it comes to the actual charges, the police probably have gathered evidence, and they, you know, did a blood test or a breath test or whatever, and if it is...
They didn't do none of that.
How do you know? She was out cold, I thought. She probably doesn't remember what happened.
From what the doctor says is that they just dropped her off and the ambulance dropped her off.
I wouldn't count on that. Most likely they did an investigation. She probably doesn't remember what happened. And the bottom line is that it's going to all come out when the charges are written. When the charges come out and she gets, you know, the sheet from the prosecutor's office, that's when you're going to see what's really going on. and they probably have evidence and witnesses, and she's going to need to defend herself. A lot of people get lulled into a false sense of security and say, oh, you know, the cop was pretty nice, and I don't think they took my blood, so I think I'm fine. And the answer is, who knows? If she was out cold or she was semi-conscious, she may not know what the hell happened. So, you know, I wouldn't count on that.
Yeah,
make sure
she
gets a lawyer. And this thing where she's calling the police and she's talking to them and chit-chatting with them, and people start telling me, you know, oh, Detective John, he's my friend. No, he's not. He really isn't. So you got to really be careful to protect yourself.
All right. Thank you for the call, Raphael. Let's go to Scott in Vancouver, B.C. Scott, you're on the Tom Likas Show with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Hello.
Good afternoon, boys.
Yes.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
My question is on recording phone conversations.
Right.
If I phone a company and they say your call is being recorded for quality assurance or whatever it is they say, and I'm going to record the same phone call, since they've already told me they're recording it, do I have to tell them I'm recording them?
Right. You don't have to. But this is a concept called the bad ear. Okay? You're the bad ear. Okay? The one who's recording. Generally speaking, when you're in public, for example, you can take photographs. Okay? You see how the paparazzi do that, right? You have a famous celebrity walking down a street in Beverly Hills or whatever, and a person takes a photograph of them, and even though that picture is their likeness, that photograph belongs to the person who took the picture. And he can take that depiction, and he can sell it, and it belongs to him. Generally speaking, you know, if you see these, you know, they have them on the internet, these booming microphones. They look like a satellite dish with a point, and you could, like, aim it at something, or you could aim it at a car, and you could actually hear what's going on at a very great distance. That's something that you're not supposed to use, and that's an invasion into seclusion. But if you and I are having a conversation in public, if you're the bad ear, if you're the one who's recording, and I don't know, that generally speaking, that's going to be okay for you to do, that you've brought a microphone, and since I was yakking about whatever, you're recording it and having this conversation with me without informing me. Now, when you talk about telephone calls, that's a very specific, you know, difference, and there are laws about telephone calls in particular, and that's where you see these companies that are informing you up front, like when you call your favorite old job, Tom, Citibank, customer service, and they say, you know, this call may be recorded for quality assurance or something like that, or for training. So they're going to record all the calls that Citibank gets, and then they're going to use them to train new employees.
Don't they need your consent, though? Isn't that the law?
They're informing you. As long as you stay on, you've consented. There's also a principle that they're supposed to have it beep. It's supposed to beep every 15 seconds.
No one does that anymore.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But generally, that's been relaxed. What you said is interesting, that you want to record a call that you're having with customer service.
Yeah, he wants to have quality control.
Why not? You could do that. I think, generally speaking, it's relatively harmless. If you expect, however, to take that recording and use it in court or use it as evidence, that's not necessarily going to work.
But it depends on what state you're in.
Well, yeah.
Because I remember when I was in Arizona, it was legal to record phone calls.
Arizona is the Wild West, baby.
Well, I understand. We should also point out Scott is in another country.
Oh, Scott, what country are you calling from?
He's in Canada. So do we know what the laws are in Canada about that?
Scott, what do you think about Canada?
They're roughly analogous.
Yeah? I think when
What about when you call between countries? Do the same rules apply? Let's say Scott is on the phone to Citibank in Utah, and he's in Vancouver. Are there laws against recording between countries?
I don't know. I think that's probably going to be the law of where you're at. So probably there are certain principles. You know, generally speaking, the government had the ability to record you and to monitor you in any international things, like calling between countries, but could not do anything, you know, inside the country. Didn't have the right to, especially the NSA and the CIA and so forth. But again, is there a police investigation? Is this a person that's being monitored or a person of interest? Or are there any warrants against this person that are being explored? Is this person a potential terrorist or whatever? A lot of different possibilities. So, Scott, what's your rationale for wanting to record?
It's a cable company that, you know, normal stuff. They promise certain things. They haven't delivered. They won't put it in writing. They'll say it all on the phone, but they won't put it. They won't back up what they promised.
Have you seen, for example, I've seen many examples. There was a guy who tried to cancel his AOL service, and they wouldn't do it or whatever. So he recorded it, and he posted it on the internet, and ultimately embarrassed them very significantly. So I think that was probably okay. Broadly speaking, I know it sounds maybe off topic, but nowadays people are really cutting the cord, right? So you can get Netflix and Hulu, and you don't necessarily need to have cable anymore. So I don't know, maybe, what do you say, Tom?
I think the one guy you're thinking about, it was Comcast.
Comcast?
Comcast Cable. And
he was trying to cancel, as I recall.
It's an amazing call. It's on YouTube. If you have 30 minutes, you should go listen to it because... you know what happens when you say, I'd like to cancel my cable service. They go, all right, sir, hold on. I'm going to put you on with the retention department.
Right, right.
And then they get on the phone.
A special department for that.
Right, and that's actually the sales department. And those people beat you over the head to keep using the service, even though you don't want it anymore. So there's a lot of that out there. And by the way, online, there are many instances where people just simply record calls to customer service. You hear many minutes of, Muzak playing or outrageous things people say. And there are people who want to record and then play that. And by the way, a lot of people want to play it on the Internet. That's what they want to do with it. They want people to hear what it's like doing business with their cable company or their credit card company or whatever.
Right, right. I think it would be very unusual for you to be prosecuted for doing that. I just don't know that it would be a great evidence in court, but obviously you could put it online. And to tell you the truth, when it comes to a cable company, I would cut the cord.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story. It's a whole other story.
There you go.
All right, good call, Scott. Thank you. We'll take a break. Got another caller coming up here. We're also going to let Adam tell you how you can get in touch with him. If you've got something really serious to discuss, we'll be telling you that as we continue.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank. Adam Sachs with us on this bonus hour. Adam, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check out my website, www.adamlawyer.com. And you can send me email, which I answer personally, adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right, there you go. It's that simple, 901-3000-TOM. On this bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show, it's Peter in Sonora, California. Peter, you're on the Tom Likas Show. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi, Adam. Adam,
hello.
great as always.
Thank you.
I wanted to get an update from you, like what it's like now compared to what I was used to 20-plus years ago. I wanted to get an update on what the domestic violence or cohabitation abuse laws and rules are nowadays. Just to be brief, back in the mid-1990s, I made a Likas 101 mistake and had a crazy bitch move in with me after only knowing her for 2 weeks. We started fighting immediately, and after 2 weeks, I said, get all your crap out of here. It's over. Move your shit out. Of course, this was on a Friday that we had the big argument, and I headed off to the store to do errands that day. When I came home, what this bitch did was she took a nail and she took what looked like a Demitasse spoon and she scratched herself up so it looked like fingerprint, my fingernail marks.
Oh, God.
She tore the phone out of the wall and threw it against the wall, creating a hole. So all of a sudden when I show up from running errands, 5 minutes later the cops show up and long story short, they arrest me for cohabitational abuse. Now, I want you to respond here what the laws are now so we can help the P1s out and the younger guys, because I'm Tom's age. And, back then when cops were called out to a domestic violence case, they had to leave with somebody. They had to arrest somebody was the general consensus. And 99% of the time it was the man. And you were just a goner back then. And back then, I couldn't afford an attorney, and I pled nolo contenda, and did my picking up trash at the side of the road for 10 days and did a anger management class. You know, but that was back then. But I still to this day feel like I was, like any woman could set it up where a man can be arrested for domestic violence, and he has to go through the domestic violence classes and the community service and the probation, perhaps. You know, and this is back in the mid-1990s. So what is the current situation now with domestic violence? Are the cops still going to haul you away no matter what? Or do they use a little bit of discretion and perhaps suss out the event a little bit more or look for false claims, that kind of thing? And, I'll let you go. What do you have to say?
Well, I'd say that today it's worse than ever. You know, the big impact, which is something that was very famous, obviously, was the OJ case. We see the impact of that every day. In fact, I was in court just the other day, and I was surprised how much the OJ case comes up, and people even said it to me. I had a case that had a connection to domestic violence, and once the judge heard that, he went crazy and, you know, came down on the guy like a million pounds of steel. This is something that is very much in our criminal justice system, starting with California, but everywhere. The federal government passed what's called VAWA, which is the Violence Against Women's Act, which also is meant to protect domestic violence, but as you hear from the title, it's protecting women and children in particular. I don't know about scratching with the nail, but what I see a lot of is the woman who smashes her face into the wall, and then says the guy punched her and gave her a black eye or whatever. And now with the rise of terrorism, if a woman says the man threatened her or made terrorist threats, I'm going to kill you, whatever, that's a very serious offense as well. And what's really tragic is that women have become very predatory, where they know what to say. It's amazing how many women come from other countries when they marry an American guy, women that come from Russia or whatever, and they know to do a setup and what to say and how to act. They're coached by their friends or women that they meet. Lawyers coach them, and they know that this is a way to get a hold of the house and to get the advantage in getting a green card, because if a woman is subjected to violence, then she doesn't have to stay married to the guy for 2 years to get the green card. She can get it without him. And there's every advantage that a woman has in pulling this kind of stuff. And that's why, for example, when you're talking about the Likas rule of having this girl move in within a few weeks, you just really can't do that.
Adam, that's terrific. It's disheartening to know that it's even worse nowadays.
Oh, of course.
And I'm glad I could have you explain that, because back in my day when my incident happened, the crazy bitch worked in law enforcement, and she knew the ropes and knew the angles and knew what would happen if she picked up the phone call. And yes, she did hit herself in the face. She probably slammed her head against the wall. She made it a little more exaggerated and did all kinds of shenanigans. It sounds like it's even worse now. And for the new guys and the new P1s, I mean, I've been listening to Tom since the old KLSX days. But for the new guys, you got to understand, it seems even worse now that these chicks, especially the ones from other countries who are hip to how to work the system and how to work things to their advantage, they really use that. Because I walked home from the grocery store with two bags of groceries, and all of a sudden I'm getting arrested for domestic violence. That stuff can still happen these days. And, I think it's a topic that maybe Tom ought to have as a reoccurring topic, because, guys, you raise your voice. You fight with a woman. You slam the front door and walk out of the house. You may be walking home to an arrest if you don't know what's going on.
What's really interesting, and this reminds me of almost like the Soviet Union or the Nazis, some kind of a police state type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got guys that are married. They think everything's fine. Ups and downs in the marriage, whatever. And they get a knock on the door, and it's a police officer. And the police officer says, "Sir, you have 10 minutes to get out of the house." And the guy literally has to grab a couple of pieces of clothes, the clothes on his back, and be out of the house in 10 minutes, because the wife got a kick-out order, which is part of a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
He's then not allowed to go to his house. He's not allowed to go to his kids. And she starts selling his things, or ruining his things, trashing his things. He wants to get his clothes because he needs a business suit for work or whatever. He can't get them. And she has control of all the property, all the bank accounts, the children, and everything else. And he's become a homeless person. And
right.
and she, it's only her allegations. They didn't necessarily even have a fight or anything. You're talking about raising your voice or slamming a door. In this case, I have a few cases where nothing happened. And the woman just did this unilaterally because she was unhappy. You know, today a woman says, "Oh, I'm dissatisfied in the marriage," but it's not enough for a woman to get a divorce. She also has to ruin the guy. I find what I call the Hispanic breakup. That generally a woman doesn't just break up with a guy; she has to get a restraining order at the end of the relationship to really humiliate him, make him lose his job, make him lose his professional licenses. You know, these things are with great consequences, and if a woman goes to a courthouse, they're bending over backwards to help her fill out the forms. The filing fees are waived, so she doesn't have to pay anything. They help her to prosecute it, and everything she says is presumed to be true. When a woman talks about that she was tortured and abused and raped and whatever, everyone's completely hysterical protecting her. They give her these emotional support people, and they're giving her resources for her children. And you, as the man, are out in the street. And the judge takes one look at you and reads the allegations, and you're a piece of crap. How could you do this to your wife? And what do you say? I didn't. It's a joke, you know?
All right, Peter, good call. Thank you. Appreciate that. Adam, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you one more time.
For sure. 800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. Send me an email, adam@adamlawyer.com.
If you missed any part of the program, maybe you're listening on demand or listening to a replay of the show, don't worry. Adam is here live, and you can call in for free legal advice coming up on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's time once again for Likas 101 News for Guys. I'm Gary Zeno.
They are not up on their physical hygiene.
We are brought to you in part by Beer Magazine. Go to blowmeuptom.com. Click on the Beer Magazine banner. Get your Likas discount to a year's subscription to the now fully digital magazine devoted to beer.
You better believe it.
When it comes to sperm donation, women prefer intellectual, shy, and calm men, apparently.
And this is like a study.
Smart and silent.
Exactly what we ask for. Silent, far.
Right. That's from Queensland,
yeah.
University of Technology.
Paul probably headed that.
How you going?
G'day, Tom. How you going?
The participants for the study were aged between 23 and 66 years old. Are there 66-year-old women looking for sperm donors?
Possibly.
Wow. That's picked from Australia, Canada, the UK, Italy, Sweden, and the US.
Then the study collected data from 56 men. Done. Via online sperm donations.
Can you do that online?
I don't get
how you
that. What? How are you not going here?
How do you make that happen online? Donating sperm online. I think I do that every day.
No, wait a minute. That is done on Craigslist. You had that guy in Kansas. Remember the story of the guy who met the two lesbians on Craigslist?
Yep.
And he brought them a Dixie cup.
No, I understand solicited online, but that's not what this says.
Via
it says
online sperm donations and websites across the regulated, meaning paid, and semi-regulated and unregulated, meaning
but
free.
But I think that's what they mean.
All righty then. There's our answer.
Done. Now we don't have to think about it.
No.
Because it
saved
hurts
you
my
trouble.
Brain
yes,
when
did.
I think.
Saves really, the trouble of thinking about it.
My brain hurts.
That's what Tom always does. Done. I don't have to think. Then.
I'll do your thinking for you.
Don't worry. You.
Just like when I vote.
Florida woman in trouble after attacking her ex-lover after a fight over what position they would fuck in their car.
I love you so much.
is a problem. Apparently, he wanted to just do her on her back. She wasn't down for that.
And this is all, by the way, this is going on in a car, so it's important.
Sure. So they fight. She ends up throwing his shit out. He attempts to get back in.
That doesn't go over well.
She throws something to hit him in the head.
And she hit him in the head.
And then she drove over his foot.
I can't trust this bitch.
Check this broad out.
I know. Wendy Looper.
Name is your destiny.
You got to see her.
She definitely loopered.
She has like an awesome, what appears to be like, even just like a it would be an awesome wig. It looks like she's like from the Golden Girls, like straight out of Golden.
Girls.
She's pretty awesome, Wendy. Yeah,
sure.
But she did attack her ex-husband, according to police. And because just the whole thing, she didn't want to lay on her back for him during sex.
I know.
Court records say that's what happened.
Yeah, more information on the Florida man who accidentally shot a woman in the head during their freaky sex session in a Tampa hotel. Tyrone Fields, that's right. Tyrone Fields.
Doesn't say his race there, does it?
It doesn't.
Doesn't.
And I would, it'd be very hard to guess
that. Banging my head here trying to figure out.
Yeah, but it's easy because if you cheat up and you just go look at the mugshot, then you know. How our friend Ty rolls. Tyrone.
Exactly.
Rolls.
Apparently he called 911 early November 7th to report. He shot a woman in the head.
I shot this woman in the head.
He had met only 2 days earlier.
At the Tampa Regency.
Hanging out in the Tampa Regency Inn and Suites. She asked Fields to put the 9mm gun to her head. He took out the pistol's magazine.
And did that.
Forgot there was a bullet in the chamber.
And as we discussed when this story first broke, it's always important to assume every single firearm, no matter where you grab it from in a locked case, always assume there's one in the chamber.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The defendant stated that he intentionally pulled the trigger as part of a little gun role play action. And that the
Obviously, gun
fired a single round at the victim.
Yeah, Christina Mager did not make it out because that 9mm can do some serious damage at close range.
Yes.
Who am I trying, kid? Knock it down.
Tyrone, by the way, couldn't tell the police the name of the broad he was banging. Said he thought her name was Christina, but he wasn't sure.
All right. But he's just being honest. It's like they met on an app or something, right? So all he was doing was to help fulfill her dreams.
Winning.
What was it? Was it Tinder? Do we know?
Well, it said the it confirmed that the both of them showed up at the motel room consensually, and the police have ruled out any sexual battery. So it leads me to believe, since it was really quick like that, he must have met or they must have met online, done or with an app, because it was
something
so
like
quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also in Chicago, Southside woman apparently launching a sex strike to end the violence in Chicago. Let's see how this works.
She's calling for
women to stop having sex with dudes until the violence stops.
What's that going to do?
You can find out at change.org.
No, it's going to, don't even, because what's going to do is end up making dudes even madder. So it's just dumb. It's not going to work.
Put down your guns. Or I won't pull down my pants. I just made that part up. She didn't say that.
It's so frustrating.
I know. And finally, that female Viagra apparently not selling well at all.
It isn't.
Big surprise to everybody.
Right. It's bullshit.
Yeah. It's off to a slow start. 227 prescriptions in just its first few weeks. 227 in the whole goddamn world.
God, it improved the sex drive in only 10% of the patients who took the placebo. So it's an increase of 10%. You know what? Maybe if you're rolling the dice, that's cool because it's better than it was before you got started. So okay, and it just works on brain chemistry. That's all it does.
By the way, how well did Viagra sell in its first month? Half a million.
Yeah, sold out. They couldn't even print. They couldn't even knock those suckers out.
But any more news for guys.com? That's going to do it for us. I'm Gary's Dino
Looper.
Check out the podcast. GaryandDino.com is where you find it. There's a brand new show for you to download every single Friday. You just go to GaryandDino.com. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the new normal.
Right, Tom?
Yes, we did.
Dovey.
Thank you.